Hi, I'm Stan Brakhage, and I'd like to present you with a riddle. I'm going to play a piece of music, and if you are at all like myself when I first heard this, or any of the people I've played it for, this music will probably haunt you, and you may have difficulty naming it. Thank you. So, in the middle of playing the first piece, I segued over to the orchestral version, at which point a lot of people at least probably recognized Stravinsky's Le Sacre de Printemps, or The Rite of Spring. The part that I was playing first is a version for two pianos, which was used, of course, in the original composition of the piece and used to help the dancers to learn how to dance to it, and played, in this case, on a London recording by the famous pair Eden and Tamir, who have made it their job to go around showing us what can be done with two pianos. One reason I did that was that this piece, which is generally associated with creation, is almost impossible to recognize in its original piano version. But by many people, at least, who are familiar with it, at least those who have seen Fantasia, the dinosaur sequence, might call it to mind when they hear the whole texture. Well, I have a sense that creation is hard to recognize in a more daily sense. All the time, people, when they think of creation these days, think of scientific explanations and so forth, or maybe ancient myths, which are often no longer believed. But around us, just in the daily chores and happenings of our life, and especially as it occurs in the mind of children, are creation myths springing anew. And one of the most amusing I know is James Broughton's Papa Had a Bird.
Papa had a bird. In the beginning was the bird, and the bird was with Big Papa. And they lived alone at the top of the sky, where Big Papa spent all his time making stars and pitching them out the window. "Listen, Dad," said the bird one day, "you ought to get out more often. This astronomy project is mighty important, but don't you ever get bored or lonesome?" "Listen, bird," said Big Papa, "I'm a poet, and I'm working for posterity. After a hard day creating, I'm perfectly content to curl up with a new space fiction." Well, the bird was bored. He wanted a holiday. So he packed a lunch from the larder, a piece of Sunday roast, a jug of moonshine, and quite a bit of divinity fudge, and he sneaked out the back door. There was no direction to go but down, so down he flew, until he came to the old Lake of Chaos, where he saw, lying on the warm banks, a serious virgin mermaid named Mary Baker Pangloss. Bird hailed her gracefully, and she sat up amazed. She had great respect for anything over her head, and she'd never seen such a bird before. In fact, Mary had never seen much of anything. She told the bird how hungry she was for a fuller life. "Have you an appetite for higher things?" said Bird, and he offered her his picnic lunch. Mary was thrilled to have something heavenly to sink her teeth into. Oh, it was divine, but very filling. It gave her a tummy ache. Indeed, she didn't feel well for months after because she began to swell. She swelled up until she thought she would burst, and then suddenly she did. And out came an egg, the lumpy, pockmarked egg of the world. "Isn't it pretty?" said Mary Baker Pangloss. "It's surely the best of all possible eggs, and what's more, it's mine." When Big Papa heard about the whole affair, he was absolutely furious. He said, "That little bastard is going to cause me a lot of trouble."
James Broughton's Papa Had a Pig. James Broughton is one of my oldest friends, one of the most delightful people on earth. He's a poet who's managed to be the most avant-garde in our time by choosing to write in various styles that are major roots of our sense of rhyming and limerick and language in general, but which have tended to be overlooked or despised. And that's not to bother James, who's anyway run in the teeth of the times in every way he could. He's a person who's originally was a tap dancer in show business and writing poetry then too. found his home in San Francisco, created a press there, which published some of the most extraordinary avant-garde works after the war, and went right on mining his own childhood experiences of poetics in relationship to modern times. That is, with a language absolutely American and not at all Mother Goosey in the original sense. A man also who insists on touching everything, every person, disconcerting to Americans who are usually uptight. When Broughton comes up and feels their biceps, their shoulders, their stomach, their legs, their thighs, the tops of their heads, and embraces them, such as few are embraced even by their mates. And James is a complete delight, and also is a constant example, at least, of creation to me. Wit is perhaps one of the greatest ways to make the daily recreation alive in people's minds. Another great wit, a great poet, and an old friend of mine, Ed Dorn, in his very latest book, Captain Jack's Chaps, by the Black Mesa Press, writes this poem, God Creates Man. There's no problem with God created man. Of course he did. He just created a lot of monkeys first for practice. But anyway, that's all rather vague. To be exact, Odin created man, as well as poetry. And he wore a hat and carried a staff, and he was a traveler like Mercury. Almost all of any poet's work, any single poem, could be said to be about creation. But one of the most interesting drives in our times to me is to mine earlier myths, to find how other people just looked at the world freshly. I'm going to play Ed Dorn reading years ago, more than a decade, in Riverside, California, his then work in progress from Recollections, La Gran Apacheria. The creation myth of the Apache recreated as Edward did in Creation.
There was a time when nothing existed. This time was before form. Time rolled on, and space, which derives its character from time, was not distinguished. There now appears a spot, a thin circular disk, no larger than the hand, yellow on one side, white on the other, in mid-air. The first distinction is naturally given. It is to be as pure conception, not genetically argued. Included in the disc, there is a bearded man the size of a hand. He is the sky man, the agency of the metaphor, the one who lives above. He wakes as if from a long sleep. He rubs his face and eyes with both hands, and where his eyes light, light appears everywhere. Above and below, a sea of light. A glance to the east, light associated with black. The south blue, the west saffron, the north the full spectrum. The one then cast out a ball, rolled from the sweat of his brow, rolled from the sweat of the brow, and upsprung the parentless girl. Woman created first, out of a direct act of labor, not from some spare part. Night girl is the nucleus of the universe. Some other one then asked, where is the earth? And the one replied to this voice of the story, I am thinking, 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 thinking. I am thinking Earth. And then he thought a little boy, and poco a poco, the whole phylum was brought into being. There was great laughter in the beginning when all creatures could talk.
Thank you.
My goodness, even called old friend Ed Dorn Edward to get some distance from him so that I could hear him as he gets at the Apache legends of creation, and then conjoined with the Indian music of Panalel Ghosh. I've been embarrassed since I first played a section of Panalel Ghosh, knowing that you have to hear the whole of it to get a sense of creation. Creation begins with at least almost nothing, and then has to develop carefully every piece of itself to make a world. And so, as usual, we end the program with A New River of Charles Ives.